Tonight, we present The Death of Halpin Frazer, adapted from the story by Ambrose Bierce.
One dark night in midsummer, a man, waking from a dreamless sleep in a forest, lifted his head from the earth and stared a few moments into the black.
Catherine. Catherine.
He said nothing more, for he was dead. The man was Halpin Frazer, and his body was discovered the following morning by Sam Holker, the deputy sheriff from Napa, and Jim Jarrelson, a detective from San Francisco. The two men left the town of St. Helena at the first glimmer of dawn and walked along the road northward up the valley toward Calistoga. They carried guns on their shoulders. Their business was manhunting.
How far is it?
No, only a little ways yet. There's a turn ahead, and it's just beyond that.
Don't see how we'll see anything when we get there in this fog.
No, it'll thin out and blow off around noon, I expect. Then we'll wait around until he shows.
Till he shows?
Oh, he'll show all right. I've seen him three times.
You say he's been hanging around the graveyard?
Yeah. Where they buried his wife. Now, she was the weirdie. Ooh. Maybe you can't blame him for what he did to her. Then he sure had a lot of practice before her. You see, she was a widow when he met her, in fact. Came to California to look up some relative. Then you know all about that.
Mm.
Strange people. Well, now, here we are, over here. You can see the graveyard's not kept up, not used anymore. Weeds all grown over the stones. Look out, you don't trip on them over there.
What about Branscombe? Shouldn't we watch out if he's around?
Oh, no, he don't show up till dark. I thought I'd show you the ground, and we could make some sort of plan for later. A grave is over here. He'll come by it like I saw him before. Over here under this spruce. You know, it's still a mystery to me why... Hey there.
Hmm?
Hey there now.
What?
Hey there now, look at this.
What is it? Well... Is it Branscombe?
No, isn't him. Don't know who it is.
The body lay upon its back, the legs wide apart. One arm was thrust upward, the other outward. But the latter was bent acutely, and the hand was near the throat. Both hands were tightly clenched. The whole attitude was that of desperate but ineffectual resistance to... What?
There's a shotgun over there. A game bag with birds in it. He's out game hunting.
Hmm. Looks like he put up a fight, too.
Yeah.
Oak shoots all bent over. Somebody bigger than him, it looks. Hmm. See the knee marks in the earth beside his hips?
Yeah.
Strangled, all right. Look at the face.
Well, Miss Branscombe did it, sure enough. Sure enough.
I had been all day in the hills west of the Napa Valley, looking for such small game as was in season. Late in the afternoon, it had come on to be cloudy. and the absence of trails had so impeded me that I was overtaken by night. Unable in the darkness to penetrate the thickets, I had lain down near the roots of a large tree and fallen into a sleep, dreamless. Dreamless until I heard the name pronounced, I couldn't imagine why, from my own throat. Then I lay down and went to sleep, but this time no longer dreamless. I thought I was walking along a dusty road that showed white in the gathering darkness of a summer night. Why or where I traveled, I did not know, though it all seemed simple and natural, as is the way in dreams. A side road left off, the appearance of having been long abandoned, because it seemed it led to something evil. Yet I turned into it without hesitation, impelled by some imperious necessity. As I pressed forward, I became conscious that my way was haunted by invisible existences. From among the trees on either side, I caught broken and incoherent whispers in a strange tongue, which yet I partly understood. They seemed to me fragmentary utterances of a monstrous conspiracy against my body and my soul. A shallow pool in an old wheel rut caught my eye with a crimson gleam. I stooped and plunged my hand into it. It stained my fingers. It was blood. It was blood. Blood was everywhere about me. The weed showed it in blots and splashes on their leaves. Defile in the trunks of the trees were broad maculations of crimson. And blood dripped like dew from their foliage. All this I observed with a terror and an expectation. It seemed to be all in expiation of some crime. I was aware of my guilt, but I couldn't remember the crime. I tried to search it out by tracing my life backward to discover the moment of sin. Scenes and incidents came crowding, one picture effacing in confusion another, but nowhere could I catch a glimpse of the crime. I will not submit unheard. I will not submit unheard. There may be powers that are not malignant traveling this accursed road. I shall leave them a record. I shall leave them a record and an appeal. I shall relate the wrongs, the persecutions that I endure. I'm a helpless mortal and a penitent. I found a memorandum in my pocket, but no pencil. I had no pencil. I broke a twig from a bush and dipped it into a pool of blood. And I began to write. I wrote rapidly. I wrote my appeal. Oh, I don't know where the words came from, but I wrote. Christina had hardly touched the paper with the twig when I heard her. At first from some measureless distance away. Soulless. Heartless. Accursed. A strange sensation began to take possession of my body and my mind. Some overpowering presence. A malevolence. Approaching me. I could not tell from what direction, from everywhere. She was everywhere about me. I had to complete my record, my appeal. I wrote with terrible rapidity. The twig rill in blood without renewal. My appeal. But in the middle of a sentence, I could not move my hands. My arms fell to my sides. The paper to the earth. I was drawn about. I looked up. Staring into a face. Sharply drawn face. Blank. Dead eyes, standing white and silent in the garments of the grave. Kathy? Mother?
Halpin was the youngest. He was more delicate than the rest, and perhaps a trifle spoiled. His father had little time for him. His father was what no Southern man is not, a politician. It took a good deal of his time, and I suppose it saved us from the war. But then later, other children were at school, and I had Halpin all to myself. I was very happy. We were both very happy. His father wanted him to study law. Oh, my law. Halpin was a dreamer, a romantic boy. I knew from the very beginning that he could be a poet. Well, it was in his blood. And he was the living image and character of his maternal grandfather, the late and great Myron Bain. That was my father, the famous poet, you know. He died just before Halpin was born, so they never knew each other. But I used to think that Halpin was the very incarnation, the very living image. It's true, you know, that before Halpin was born, Myron was all I had. Well, that was really how it was. My husband was in politics, you know, and the children came and went with him all so fast. And it's true, I can hardly remember a one of them now. Sometimes I think there was only Halpin after all. And before him, Myron Bain. Oh, Myron, we always believed we'd be together again afterwards. But being alive was all we had after all, wasn't it? You see, my father and I were very close. I was his inspiration. I was all he had. The only one he ever really loved. We had a perfect sympathy that the world would never have understood. So we had to take care. We had to protect our beautiful weakness. Our guilt. Then suddenly he died. And I waited. In all this dark world until Halpin was born. His father wanted him to study law. Oh, my. The Tennessee Frasers were a practical folk, having a contempt for any quality unfitting a man for the wholesome vocation of politics. Well, Halpin was going to disappoint them, and they could see it from the first. And what they said about him only showed their ignorance. They said he wasn't a very bright and he was a crazy like his grandfather, Myron Bain. Oh, my. Sometimes you just have to shut the whole world out, don't you? So I expect his mother spoiled him a little. You can't go blaming her for that, can you? How happy we were, Halpin and I. I was still young, you know. They'd say, Halpin and his beautiful mother. Of course, from his early childhood, Halpin called me Kathy. Halpin and Kathy. No one would have known to look. They were jealous. Yes, they were of us, as our attachment became yearly stronger, more tender. By the time he was 25, Halpin was the most beautiful of God's creatures on this earth. I must say, he didn't turn out to be much of a poet by then. But I knew that it might just burst out of him at any moment. He had it all in him, of course. All waiting. I tried to help him a little with his writing and reading. He was a little slow at first. But he was a dreamer. A romantic dreamer. You know, the two of us were almost inseparable. And by strangers observing our manner, we weren't infrequently taken for lovers. Oh, my. In all their wild days, they'd never believed how right they were. And we laughed at them, Halpin. We laughed at them, at their outrage and envy. We knew they envied us. That element in all the relations of life, strengthening, softening, and beautifying. Yes, beautifying, even those of consanguinity. Oh, Halpin, do you remember? Do you remember even a single moment? Well, then there was that day you left me. Halpin had taken a job with a local lumber company. Oh, he wanted to do something. Didn't want to be so dependent on me, I suppose. And this friend of his talked him into working for the Talcott and Bleecker Lumber Company. Well, he hadn't been with them a month. And then that day he came into my boudoir. I suppose I knew, Halpin, by the way you kissed me on the forehead. And toyed for a minute with a lock of my hair. Had you stopped loving me already, Halpin? We can't tell, can we, when someone really stops loving?
Kathy?
Well, Halpin, I have a distinct feeling that there's something on your mind. What is it, Halpin?
Oh, Kathy, would you greatly mind if I were called away to California for a few weeks?
To California?
It's for the company, Kathy. Mr. Talcott himself asked me to do this.
California is far away. How many weeks?
Only a few, Kathy. 4. Maybe 5.
Well, Halpin, it is hardly needful for me to answer with my lips a question to which my telltale cheeks have already made reply. Evidently, I would greatly mind.
Oh, Kathy, don't feel that way. I want to do this for the company, you know.
Yes, you want to get away, Halpin. I know. Oh, my dear son, I should have known this was coming. Didn't I lie awake half the night weeping because during the other half, my and Bane, your grandfather, came to me in a dream. And standing by his portrait, young too and handsome as that, he pointed to your portrait on the same wall. And when I looked, it seemed that I could not see the features. You have been painted with a cloth over your face. A cloth such as we put on the dead? Your father has laughed at me when I've told him about my dreams. But you and I, dear, we know that such things are not for nothing. And Halpin, I saw below the edge of the cloth the marks of hands on your throat. Oh, Halpin, forgive me, but we've not been used to keep such things from each other. Perhaps you have a different interpretation of my dream, Halpin. Perhaps it does not mean that you will go to California. Or maybe you take me with you.
That's such a strange dream, Kathy. You dreamed all that before. Didn't tell me.
Well, now you know, Halpin. I remember hearing that there are medicinal springs in California. Places where one recovers from rheumatism and neuralgia. Well, now, that might do me some good. My fingers have grown so stiff lately. You see, Halpin? So stiff, especially in the morning. I'm almost sure they have been giving me great pain while I slept. Like they was grasping something and just couldn't let go.
Like a throat, Kathy. Like a throat when you hold them like that.
Oh, but that's only in a dream, Alpin. And we don't want to mistake a dream for real life.
No, Kathy. No. We don't ever want to take a chance of mistaking a dream that way.
That was the last thing you ever said to me, Halpin. Seems I remember it as. You were gone next morning. Couldn't see you for dust. Oh, Halpin. At first I thought it was in a dream you left me. And I couldn't wake out of it, hard as I tried. My poor hands never straightened out. They try to find you in all their emptiness. You never wrote. You just vanished like you never was. Oh, my. I came all the way to California looking for you. A long while in San Francisco, someone said you'd gone to sea. So I watched the ships and the sailors. I thought each one was you, Halpin. I made believe they were because I wanted to wake up out of my dream. Then a very mean man indeed, took me up here to the mountains. And we lived a while, torturing each other. I hid all his stolen money in the graveyard. Still looking for it, I suppose. Oh, he was very mean to me, Halpin. He had a little knife, which he kept sharp as a razor.
Kathy.
Look, Halpin.
Kathy.
Look at me.
Kathy, go.
See what he did? He said he wanted to find the spot that hurt the most. But nothing hurt, Halpin. Nothing hurt.
Kathy.
Nothing hurt anywhere. Only the memory. And he couldn't find the right spot for that.
See?
But he got very close one dark night. See, Halpin? My delicate white throat.
No.
See how he cut with his razor knife from this ear to that ear. It never stopped bleeding, Halpin. Oh, you'd never believe how much blood could be stored up in one soulless body. See it, Halpin?
Keep away.
Keeps me strong enough to come to you.
Keep away,
and bring these aching hands to your own warm, dear throat.
Kathy, no.
See me, Halpin?
Kathy!
No. See what's gone out of me?
No, Kathy, get away. Kathy.
Oh, my.
Kathy, no.
Oh, please. Oh, love gone out of me. I am your dream, Halpin. There is no appeal for you, Halpin. No.
Kathy!
To Jaralson and Hulker, the nature of the struggle was made clear by a glance. The face and throat were purple, almost black. The shoulders lay upon a low mound, and the head was turned back at an angle otherwise impossible. From the froth filling the open mouth, the tongue protruded, black and swollen. The throat showed terrible contusions, not mere finger marks, but bruises and lacerations wrought by two strong hands that must have buried themselves in the yielding flesh, maintaining their terrible grasp until long after death.
The work of a maniac, all right. Branscombe LaRue.
Look here. Looks like he was writing something in a memorandum pad. Pretty scrawly. Well, I guess under the circumstances. Can you make it out?
Let's see. It's poetry, looks like. The air was stagnant all. Silence was a living thing that breathed among trees. With blood, the trees were all adrip.
Sounds like Bane.
Bane? Who's Bane?
Myron Bane. Poet half a century ago. Now, why would this poor fellow want to be copying down that dismal stuff?
Dismal, all right. Well, in a way, I guess it figures.